The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Deathlands 69, Black Harvest. Ryan's company emerges from a gateway in the Midwest with a badly wounded comrade.
Let him rest. His wounds are infected.
That only pre-dark medicine can save. The Baron of a local vill has pre-dark healing drugs.
What kind of drugs do you need?
But the real money's in a more deadly drug, the addictive Deathlands Bang.
I'm not talking about that kind of drug.
Where drugs and riches go, death shadows every step.
We can't stay here. They'll chill us in a heartbeat.
And moments of passion are dangerous and brief.
Touch me there.
And there?
Oh, yes. Oh, God, yes.
No matter which side of a firefight you stand on.
Over here!
Deathlands number 69, Black Harvest. Seven Unabridged Hours in graphic audio. The movie in your mind.
Black Harvest will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting September 2005. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy of Black Harvest. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book. The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Deathlands 70, Vengeance Trail.
Spread out.
Ryan Carter. Gunned down and left for dead by the new provisional U.S. Army. A ruthless force commanded by a brilliant general with a propensity for casual mass murder.
Kill them all!
And a vision to rebuild America.
This will be a new country!
Waging war from a pre-dark, fusion-powered armored locomotive, this man is about to unlock the secrets of the gateways. As the rest of Ryan's group stand powerless. Except for one. Hope may be lost for Christy Roth, but for her, revenge is enough.
This fucker's chilled meat. Chilled meat.
Vengeance Trail will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting September 2005. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy of Vengeance Trail. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
Graphic audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Timberlee Chanel, Kate Torrey, David Elias, and Christopher Graybill. Deathlands 67. Death Hunt.
Oh, the sun shines bright on my old Kentucky home.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, Doc. Enough is enough.
Oh, egad. The next line has completely escaped me.
Good thing. If you remembered it, I'd have to shoot you.
Mildred had been pleading with Doc to stop singing half-remembered lines for what seemed to be hours. She doubted that it had really been that long, but time was beginning to drag, and that was what it felt like to her. The companions were seated in the kitchen area of a redoubt, the last of the dried and still edible frozen goods in pots on top of the stove. The self-heats had been securely stowed for their journey ahead. They'd leave when their Krons told them it was daylight up above. A pall of gloom hung over the friends. There were only six of them now, where there had been seven before. In the time following the discovery that Sharona had jumped and taken Dean with her, Ryan had been plunged into an angry, brooding depression. Although all of the companions had been shocked, Dean's father had been hit on a deeper level, and a scar had formed that was more pronounced than the facial scar that ran down one side of his face. So many questions were unanswered. Had Sharona tricked the boy somehow? Or had Dean left of his own accord, without a word to his father and friends? Where were they now, and what was to become of them? Without the answers to those questions, he had withdrawn into himself, not even sharing his feelings with Christy. For several days, he had been little more than a spectral presence, haunting the corridors of the redoubt where they were now resting. He finally reemerged into their midst, and when he spoke, his pain was evident.
Wherever that damned bitch has jumped to, and wherever they ended up, there's no way we can follow them. And she knows that. But even if we can follow, we can still hope. I can still hope. All we can do now is continue on. I want us to get out of here as soon as we can.
There were no arguments from the others. Leaving this redoubt would at least remove Ryan from some of the physical reminders of his loss. The companions scoured the redoubt, stripping the place of anything useful. No one spoke much, and the task was achieved in triple-quick time. They were soon entering the Mat-Trans chamber, settling into positions that would minimize the stress and agony that came with every jump. It was the one-eyed man himself who closed the chamber door, folding himself into a sitting position, knees drawn up protectively, as the chamber air began to crackle. A white mist whirled wisp-like from the metallic discs on the floor and ceiling. The calmness at the start of the jump was something Ryan welcomed. That didn't last long. It never did. The dream began, not the usual surreal nightmares of a Mat-Trans jump. Those kinds of nightmares at least had shape to them. They were sickening and exposed every fear and loathing contained within the human brain. But they were just nightmares, just the subconscious dredging up psychic detritus and spewing it out in protest of the battering it was taking from the jump. No, these hauntings were far worse. They were fragments, wisps, such as the white mist that had swirled around him before he'd finally passed out. A succession of images and memories danced through his mind. Dean as a small boy, although Ryan hadn't known of Dean until the boy was 9. Sharona, as she once was, before the sickness. The Brody school in which he had enrolled the lad when he had found him again. The circumstances of Dean's rejoining their party the last time, after being used as a gladiator in a sport of barons. Then, what had happened since. Mildred frantically nursing him back to health after a harrowing fall from a roof in Zero City, snatching him from Jenna, the twisted wife of Baron Alien, who had mixed old occult practices and old tech to concoct her own version of a master race. The last image that was ripped from his head and held up in front of him was of Dean as he had last seen him, at rest in the redoubt, with plans for the next day. Plans to explore the underground base, to join his father and friends in stripping into valuables before moving on to their next location, the next step in their search for. Well, for what? What was there now, beyond survival? Twice before, Ryan had found his son and then lost him. Was there to be a third chance? Ryan opened his eye with a feeling that, should he part his lips, his insides would burst out. Except this time, he wouldn't fight it and he wouldn't care. But in the end, he did. Operating on instinct rather than intellect, he pulled himself together, battling to regain the full use of all his senses as rapidly as possible. As usual, he was first on his feet and the first to organize the six companions into a party capable of securing the immediate area. As always, it was Jack and Doc who took longest to recover from the jump. JB and Mildred exchanged concerned glances as they secured the area. Ryan made himself go through the motions, though without his usual alertness. Christy could sense his dark mood and kept an eye on him. A thorough rec determined that the redoubt was secure, so they settled in for a while before heading into the outside world. Although they had rested and restocked somewhat in the previous redoubt, the luxury of recovery time after a jump was not to be squandered. Deserted, this redoubt had remained untouched since the advent of Skydark. The only signs of the passage of time were the layer of dust that had gathered where the gently wheezing air conditioners had slowly begun to wind down. The air was slightly stale, and some of the comps had cut out when transistors and fuses had died of age. As with most of the redoubts they had visited, there was no sign of life. But unlike many of those other redoubts, there was little interior sign that the land around this installation had suffered much upheaval. The levels they explored showed minor cracks in the reinforced walls and ceilings, and little else. And also unlike other bases, this one hadn't been completely stripped. The armory would further replenish their ammo supply, and the clothes store would provide new underwear, t-shirts, and fatigues for those who wanted them. The companions spent a whole day taking inventory and planning their next move. Another good night's sleep refreshed them enough to tackle the unknown up to the surface. The maps and charts on the walls of some of the offices and comp rooms suggested they were in the northwest of the Deathlands, an area prone to erratic climatic conditions. Eventually, they found themselves gathered in the kitchen area, waiting for their last meal before heading out.
How long before we eat? I'm getting antsy waiting down here.
Yeah, need food before I get going. Better face what's out there with full stomachs.
It'll be ready when it's ready, just like life.
Is that the Ryan Carter version of philosophy?
I had some time to think, and I've had a lot to think about. I guess you just have to keep on, right?
As long as there's life, you never give up.
Give what up?
When she met his stare, Christy saw genuine confusion. Was she saying never to give up looking for Dean, or did she mean never give up on their quest? But what use was looking for the promised land when he would never have his son to share it with?
Give up on anything. On each other.
There was apparently little else to say. Ryan knew she was right. If nothing else, the companions had to look out for one another. They had been through too much together and lost too many friends along the way for it to be any other way. He nodded briefly, with a tiny hint of a smile. Christy relaxed at the gesture.
You're right, lover. Let's eat, get ourselves together, and get out there.